If you need immediate help, please call the National Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. Bottle of wine, fruit of the vine. When you gonna let me get sober? Let me go home and start over. Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio. Brought to you in part by Recovery Centers of America, the nationally recognized leader in drug and alcohol treatment. Using proven, evidence-based treatment, including 24/7 medically supervised detox, inpatient and outpatient options, you'll receive exceptional care from an expert team of master-level clinicians, physicians, nurses, and staff using 12-step methodology and medications. Jefferson University Hospitals and Thomas Jefferson University, providing excellent clinical and compassionate care in the Philadelphia region, a proven leader in healthcare and education since 1825, and Acadia Healthcare, with locations on the East Coast. Acadia maintains a standard for excellence in the treatment of behavioral health and addiction concerns. And now, here are your hosts, Gary Handler and Mark Sigmund.
Hey, thanks for joining us and welcome to the show. Clean and Sober Radio features real people with real stories about addiction to drugs and alcohol. And I just want to make mention, Mark Sigmund is not here today. He's not feeling well. And our dear friend Linda Elkins is with us today. She's going to be co-hosting. So, Linda, thanks for sitting in for Mark.
You're welcome.
We got a couple stories you want to run through. First of all, do animals like drugs and alcohol? In South Africa, local legend has it that elephants like to drink. They seek out the marulu tree, overindulge on its sweet fruits, and enjoy the intoxicating effects of slightly fermented juice. Elephants aren't the only critters who enjoy getting high. One study found that nearly one in five monkeys preferred a cocktail of alcohol mixed with sugar water over a sip of sugar water alone. And, you know, Brad, our technical guy here, made a great point that through evolution, addiction was not lost.
Exactly. I don't think so. I remember my uncle. I have a picture of my uncle being in the rainforest or something when he was in the army, and they were giving beers to the monkeys, and the monkeys loved it and came back for more every day.
Yeah.
So they really do like it. They're just like us.
Right.
Just like us.
Well, they're closest to us. So I would just, you know, if this gets out of hand, I would open up the first rehab for elephants and monkeys.
Absolutely.
Right? Would you be my partner in that?
For sure.
Okay. 1953, the CIA had a program named Operation Midnight – I won't read the last word. The CIA set up safe houses in New York and San Francisco with two-way mirrors. They hired prostitutes to dose the unsuspecting clients with LSD. And this went on for some 20 years until it was abandoned in 1966. Can you imagine our own government doing that?
I can imagine.
Yes.
I'd love to see those tapes.
Exactly. Exactly. It's incredible. One of my favorite stories, which actually Mark Sigmund sent to me, this is from Houston, Texas. A Texas man was charged with possessing nearly a half a pound of methamphetamine after deputies mistook kitty litter in his car for the drug. On December 5th, 24-year-old Ross LeBeau was arrested during a traffic stop after deputies found the kitty litter inside a sock. Deputies tested the substance twice, and it came up positive for methamphetamine. On Wednesday, the case was dismissed after a retest determined it was not meth, but it was kitty litter.
I guess, have to be updated in Texas. The street tests usually work really good.
That's scary. You know that?
And if they can't tell the difference between meth and kitty litter, looking at it and smelling it, like...
Yeah, these cops must have been...
non-druggies.
Non-druggies. Non-druggies. All right. So we have a great show coming up. Judge Christopher Maddox is our guest, and he is a magisterial district justice outside of Philadelphia. And when we come back, it's going to be very interesting to find out the ins and outs of what it's like in his courtroom. And our viewers and listeners can call in and actually get firsthand information from the judge when we come right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
If you're struggling with alcohol or drugs, Recovery Centers of America can help. RCA's local inpatient and outpatient programs are founded on science and delivered with heart from an expert, caring team who will inspire and guide you every step of the way. Call 1-888-RECOVERY now to speak with a treatment advisor. At RCA, you'll be in a community that builds connections and fosters support from peers and RCA's team of medical professionals and recovery support specialists. At RCA's state-of-the-art campus in Devon, PA, and Mays Landing, New Jersey, they tailor your treatment to you and also offer specialized programs for patients with history of trauma, for patients who have achieved recovery but are experiencing a relapse, for young adults, adults 50 years and older, a confidential program for first responders and military, and a faith-based program. RCA answers the phone and accepts patients 24/7. And because it's local and in-network with insurance providers, treatment is affordable and accessible. Don't wait. Call 1-888-RECOVERY today.
Hi, this is Helen Maloney from Freedom House, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio, WWDB 860.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Heard on these great stations, WWDB Philadelphia, KDWN Las Vegas, Nevada, WHFS Tampa, Florida, and WGAC Augusta, Georgia. We're back. Judge Maddox, welcome to Clean and Sober Radio.
Thank you for having me on this beautiful day. It's good to be here with you all again. And I note that Linda is here for the second time. This is the second time I've been on. And I know Mark likes to look into your past. And so this is the second time that Mark has been absent when I've been here. So maybe I should have my court run his name and see if he's ducking me for a certain reason.
Absolutely. You know,
it's possible.
That's a great idea. You know, he might have some outstandings that Mark doesn't even know about.
I'm sure he's listening.
I'm sure he's listening. Give
him a laugh.
I'm sure he is. So, Judge Maddox, you're a magisterial district justice. What exactly does that mean?
In Pennsylvania, we're elected every 6 years. We are most, not all, but a lot are attorneys, but you do not have to be an attorney. You can take a class with the state of Pennsylvania, and if you pass that class and then you run for election and then you're elected, you can sit as a district judge. There's about 530 of us throughout the state of Pennsylvania. Of course, Philadelphia has municipal court judges. They don't have district judges. If you envision a pyramid, we're the lower level, the fatter part of the pyramid, so we see more people. So we're sort of the first judge that most people in the criminal system or in the justice system will see.
You know, Judge, you took the words out of my mouth. You know, I say that the level of court that you preside over is probably the most important for our community of addicts or whatever criminal activity, because after the arrest, you're the first encounter in the legal system.
Correct. And in fact, in Delaware County, we started, and I think I spoke about this the last time, we started the Second Chance Court, which was basically at arraignment. When we first get the person, we tell them their charges, we advise them of their rights, and we set a date for a preliminary hearing. But at the same time, we talk about bail, and part of that bail was this Second Chance Court condition, which would mean that we would put a nominal amount of bail on them and then get them to a drug and alcohol evaluation right away. And so that was specifically done by the Court of Common Pleas because of the opioid crisis and the fact that people just weren't making it through. Now, again, as we have to keep in mind, I'm only seeing the people that are in front of me because they've been accused of a crime. So I'm not seeing everybody, but at least it's in a small way something that our court can do to help with that situation. And again, that was created by the Court of Common Pleas.
So what is your background?
My background is, well, I always like to talk about I'm one of 13 children.
Yeah, that's Linda. Is that amazing?
That's amazing.
13. I have trouble with two.
Yeah. I'm an only. So.
Yeah, 9 brothers and 3 sisters. That's why I'm so shy.
Do you know their birthdays?
Not the birthdays. Most of them I do, but I know the names.
Okay, so. Good. That's great.
We used to, when people used to say, what are their names? It was almost like sing-songy. You'd be like Bobby, Michael, Chris, or Diamond, you just kind of sing it because there were so many of them. But anyway, and then so educational-wise, I went to Temple University for psychology. was probably going to go to Virginia Tech to be a a 6-year, doctorate, teach, all that kind of stuff. And at the last minute, I decided to take the law school aptitude test. I did really well. And then I applied to law schools and I got accepted to Temple, Widener, Villanova, most of the schools that I applied to. Widener gave me a scholarship. I went to Widener. And then after that, I actually got a few years into being into a lawyer. About 5 years in, I went back and got my master's at Temple University for trial advocacy, the trial advocacy program.
Is that the LLM?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm always amazed, Linda, with people that have really educated themselves.
Right.
And it makes me feel like I should have done more in school. You know that?
We were busy getting a different education.
Well, let me just say, it's never too late, number one.
And
number two, it doesn't have to be official. So I read a lot as an adult, and I believe that your education starts when you're done with your last formal education.
Yeah, that's right.
And so you can – and as you know, with the addicted community, self-education is probably a pretty key component to keeping yourself straight and moving forward.
Yeah. Totally agree. Right. Hey, if you've just joined us, Linda and I are talking with Judge Christopher Maddox about every aspect of the legal system. We're going to get into his views on addiction and recovery, and that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing right now. And I always like to mention, if you need help, call the U.S. Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. This is not a dead end if you're in an addiction. And we always say there's no drive-thrus, there is no delivery service for recovery, but there are plenty of resources out there. And you know what? Take advantage of it. Don't waste all the years that I wasted trying to figure out if I really wanted to get sober. Mm-hmm. Linda, did you waste a lot of years?
For sure.
It's not a dead end unless you're dead. So give that number a call, 1-800-662-HELP. And somebody will answer the phone and be able to assist you,
I have a question for the judge.
Sure.
I just read about a police diversion program, and I think it's in Philly, that they're starting to divert people at a very low level before they reach the judge, that they're a very minor thing. They're offering them treatment.
Is
have
that
you
Leto?
Heard about that?
Is that the Leto program?
I think it might be.
Yeah.
Law enforcement treatment.
Yeah, that's the one.
A Josh Shapiro's deal, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How does that work?
I'm not really familiar with it.
I have a little information.
It's done before my. It's done before,
before
it gets
they get to
me.
You.
Yeah. Yeah, it's done before. It's generally a program where the police have been educated, and are continuing to be educated. When they want the public to feel like they can call the police and say, "I'm in trouble. I need help," instead of having the fear that they're going to be arrested, and get into that whole
right.
scene. So it's an early on program, and it's another step in the right direction for the legal system, I believe, that we can't incarcerate out of the addiction, Judge, who decides – I've always wanted to know this. Who decides if a case stays with you or goes up to common pleas?
Well, they all start with us, and then we just decide at a preliminary hearing – whether it's more likely than not that that defendant committed those crimes. And then we hold it over to the next level. So and some cases can actually end at our level if we determine that there's not enough evidence for it to continue. But it's our call at that point.
So when a case gets in front of you, is there a prosecutor at that point or not?
In Upper Darby, there is. I think I spoke once before that at some courts, they have the actual police officers do the prosecution.
Okay.
But in Upper Darby, we have an assistant district attorney that's scheduled every criminal day to handle the matters for the Commonwealth.
Can you go against their recommendation?
Oh, I'm the judge. I can.
You can do whatever you want.
Well, I have to be fair to both sides. So I listen to the prosecution and I listen to the defense.
Yeah.
And then, I always like to tell people it's really all about common sense. And so I just make a common sense determination of what's in front of me and how to proceed. So,
Linda, Judge Maddox has the best job, I think, right? in the whole world. I'm so jealous in a way because I did go to law school for a while until we had a disagreement and law school won. But it must be such a satisfying. It is powerful. It is a very respectable position. I think it's the most respectable position. Mm-hmm. And wow, that's all I can say.
Well, you're always invited to come maybe on a Friday morning and sit with me and you could see some criminal cases, or you could come on a Thursday afternoon and see some – I know you're into real estate. You could see some landlord and tenant cases.
Would you allow Linda or myself to make the final decisions?
That's out.
I probably couldn't do that, but but we could talk about it afterwards.
We could talk about it. No, it's an incredible position. You know, we had Judge Eisenberg from Montgomery County here 2-3 weeks ago.
I heard him.
Yeah, it was it's incredible. You guys, I'm in awe. I guess because I thought I was going to be a lawyer, and as the judge said in Pennsylvania, at the district level, you don't have to be a lawyer.
Correct.
And you know, for our viewers and listeners out of state, I'm assuming that all states have different levels of the legal system, the courts. So we're just discussing Pennsylvania right now because we have a Pennsylvania judge here. I want to mention something else. When we have, you know, people are listening to the show or watching the show, and we call out names. It's because the audience needs to know that we are live in Philadelphia on Facebook at 3:00, and you can watch us do the show live on Facebook with our Facebook page, which is Clean and Sober Radio. That's who these people are who we constantly talk about. And, you know, besides watching us or listening, we have podcasts. I want to remind everybody, and you can listen to the show anywhere, anytime in the whole world. So it's pretty cool.
If I could just interject.
Sure.
So Fridays, as you know, I'm really busy in court today. Obviously, we didn't have court, and that's why we set it up for today that I could come in and and talk, which is a great pleasure and honor for me. But so Fridays, I'm always really exhausted by the end of the day. So my routine since I've been here last year, and it's almost been – I think it's been almost exactly a year since I've been here. My routine has been to – I wait for the update from you on Facebook, and you have the link on there. And then I click the link. And actually, as I'm winding down at the end of the day, after like I have dinner and I'm home and everything – I listen to this almost every week.
Well,
and
we're
I love
honored
it.
For
yeah,
that.
No, I love it.
Brad, is that how it works?
That's how it works.
I don't do it. I'm sure you do it. He posts it, you know?
Yeah.
That's great to hear because that's why we're here. We want to educate and we want to help people and have fun doing it.
And I have to tell you, by listening to it, you really do get a sense of, you know, what you're dealing with and maybe as a judge how you should deal with things. And have a little bit of compassion and have a little bit of understanding. I know a big thing with you is stigma. I know why you say it. I don't feel that way, and I hope that most people don't hold it against people, but I understand what you're saying. So, you know, I get it.
And that's why we love you here. And, you know, we're good friends now because we all the time. And I know that you're compassionate. I know you're fair. You're compassionate. And that's what we need because, you know – until you walk in somebody's shoes, you really don't know what's going on in their lives. I'm not talking about – well, I guess I'm talking about every crime, I guess. I guess the higher level crime, the harder it is to have compassion. But everybody comes with a story. You know, all these shootings that are going on, I have no idea what it's like to grow up in a family where there's no money. There's a lot of things. And it's a tough thing, and I don't know the solution, but I know that – you know, you're the first line in a legal situation, and I know that you're a fair guy, and I think you're really a great guy, and everybody should appreciate you. And I see, you know, people make comments towards you on Facebook and stuff, and you're appreciated.
Yes, thank you.
And that's a nice way to live, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So let's see what else. Okay, so you grew up with 13 kids in a house. My God, how many bathrooms?
One and a half.
Right? One, of course.
You know, people now complain. Right? No air conditioning, right?
I'm sure.
Was there window units? Did you have that?
After a while, yeah.
What did – can I ask what your dad did?
He was a civil engineer.
Uh-huh.
surveyor, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Because you know we've had Jack Stoltzheimer on the district attorney for Delaware mm-hmm. County, and his dad drove a trolley from 69th Street
oh,
to
yeah.
you know
SEPTA.
Yeah, SEPTA.
That's great.
Yeah, it's that's interesting. Okay, so you graduate from law school, you get a master's degree. Where did you go from there?
Right after law school, I went into private practice. I had an interview with the DA and the public defender. I probably had a job set up with the public defender, but at the last minute, I interviewed with a civil practice firm, and it was a pretty well-known firm in Media, Pennsylvania, and so I went with them.
Great. Was that satisfying?
Yeah, and I did that for about 9.5 years, and then I got the call – hey, you know, we want you to be a judge in Upper Darby. What do you think? And I was like, yeah, where do I sign up?
Yeah. Hey, Judge, we have a caller on the phone who knows you.
Okay.
Bobby Yantorno,
yes.
Are you there?
Yo.
Yo. You're in Florida, right, Bobby?
Yeah, how you doing, guys?
Good. Well, the judge is here, so give him one of your stories.
How you doing, Your Honor?
I'm doing great. I'm jealous.
Well, you know, I tried to go ahead, and when I called, they gave me a number to call back on, and I called it, and it was a marijuana dispensary. So I'm like, oh, I think I got the wrong number.
Yeah, you probably did, Bobby.
But I know Judge Maddox. He's a very good man.
Yes, he is.
And, you know, I just want to call and say keep up the great work.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Now, Bobby, when you were chief of police, I forget what name you used, in Narberth, Pennsylvania, did you ever have any like legal dealings with the judge's court? I know it's a different county, but.
Oh, yeah. Actually, Judge Ferber at the Common Pleas, he set up a thing for veterans who committed crimes, you know. Yeah, they worked with the veterans because a lot of them had drug and alcohol problems.
Uh-huh. And I'm sure you saw a lot of it in your line of work because we knew somebody to get you arrested 4 times.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of people.
Yeah. You didn't get me.
No. You were clean and sober by then.
Yeah, I certainly was.
I know you were. It's been 40 years, I think, now.
It'll be 40 years in a couple of weeks. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, listen, Jay, you having a good time in Florida?
I'm having a great time. And, you know, I saw the thing with Chris Maddox coming on, and I just had to go ahead and give a call because the last time I was with him, we were with my adopted son, Sadiq, and only a couple of short months later, that little girl that we were there talking to was shot and killed by an errant bullet.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And Sharon Hill, yeah, you know, from a football game, officers were shooting, and wasn't a good thing.
What a tragedy for so many people, as happens every single night, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about something fun. How's the weather down here? Is it good?
It's beautiful right now. Let me look at the car. It's 86 degrees, sunny, and I'm in Inglewood right now. Heading back to Venice.
Good for you. Good for you, Bob. Thank you so much for checking in, man. We miss you. I miss you.
I miss you, too.
Well, we'll see. We'll see you soon. Yeah.
You got it. Judge Maddox, I'm sure I'll see you on my new job. And take care and keep up the great work.
Great. Thank you.
Good deal. Thanks for the call,
guys.
Bobby. Thank you. Thank you very
much.
Take care,
listeners.
All right. Hey, listen, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get more into – I want to know what it feels like, Linda, to sit up on the bench. That's
okay.
Really what I want to know and make those important decisions. We'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Huntington Creek Recovery Center is Eastern Pennsylvania's premier provider of transformative care for individuals whose lives have been impacted by addiction. Our 40-acre campus offers a tranquil, recovery-focused environment. We specialize in evidence-based care that addresses the effects of trauma and offer a unique program specifically for adolescent males. Huntington Creek Recovery Center can help you achieve lasting sobriety. Call us today at 844-948-2000.
2320. Hey, this is Mark Stein from the classic rock band Vanilla Fudge, and you're listening to station WWDB.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Oh, that's right. We're back. I'm going to do a little roll call here. Mimi Dorshu is watching. Adam's Apple is watching. Judy Hansford. Ray Parzik, my 10th grade history teacher. Just love this guy.
Awesome.
Love him. Susan Garber. Andrea Duffy. Hello, Andrea. Judge Duffy. Laura Story. Hello, guys. Happy Easter to you and all. God bless you all. Have a great weekend. Love you all. And another great Clean and Sober Radio show. Thanks. All right, we'll get back to them after that. So, Judge Maddox, I want to know what it feels like. You're in a robe. It's sort of priestly in a way. You're in a robe. You're sitting up higher than everybody. And you have to make incredible decisions. I mean, you know, when Judge Eisenberg was here, he said some of the decisions are life and death. And some of your decisions can become life or death. How do you make – not how do you. What's it like to make the decisions, and do you take the stuff home with you?
Yes. So I like to approach it by I let everybody talk. I want to hear what everybody has to say. And I'm not just talking about criminal matters, anything. As you know, we do landlord-tenant. We do civil cases. We do traffic tickets. We do non-traffic offenses. So I always find that the best approach is to just let everybody get out what they want to get out. And then that gives me a good idea of what I need to do to, you know, if it's a civil case, find in the plaintiff's favor, find for the defendant. If it's a criminal case, do I hold it over to the court of common pleas? Do I not hold it over to the court of common pleas? When there's often times where you'll be driving home at the end of a day and you'll be like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that. But the good thing about the system is that there's always an appeal to the next level.
Yeah.
So anything that we do criminally is going to go up to the common pleas. Anything that we do civilly, if somebody wants to appeal it, that can go up to the common pleas. Landlord, tenant, same thing.
Can the government appeal a ruling? If you find it, if a defendant comes in front of you, right, and you find there's not enough evidence, yeah, can the government appeal that?
They can't appeal, but they can file a rearrest. So they can start over. It still comes back to the same judge, though, and then maybe they'll have maybe that witness that didn't want to show up. That's a huge, huge problem at our level. A lot of times, witnesses just they don't want to show up, yeah, or somebody talks to them and then they don't show up. And a lot of times a defense attorney will be like, well, Judge, you know, the witness isn't coming here today. I said, oh, really? So the witness isn't coming here today. You know that, right? Oh, okay. And then I said, but the Commonwealth here has a right to present whatever case they want to present. So Commonwealth, if you want to proceed without that witness, go ahead. Let's see what you have. But that bothers me when they say, oh, the witness isn't coming in. And I think I try to encourage everybody, show up. Let us deal with it. Oftentimes the Commonwealth will withdraw it if the victim doesn't want to go forward.
Right.
So let's just take care of it in front of us and not, you know, play games or whatever else, because there's serious things at stake here.
I think the problem of witnesses not coming forth either in court or with the police is a big problem across the country. And that's why I know that at least in Philadelphia, with all the shootings that are going on, I think they've only solved 10 or 15% of all the homicides in the last 2 years. If you see something, you need to say something. Now, that's easy for me to say because I'm not threatened by anybody, but I can understand intimidation on the street.
Absolutely.
Right, Linda? I mean,
yeah, and they grew up that way. People in Delaware County, they're not going to come talk about it, other people, about their dealer. You know,
why
it's
not?
They just are too afraid.
Right, right.
They're going to get a bad rap in the neighborhood. People won't deal with them anymore. People will be afraid of them. People call them a snitch. So they're really afraid to come forward.
Right. The good thing is the DA's office, Jack Stolzheimer and company, they actually have a victim's witness program, which I think is going to help. And we've always kind of had it, but I think they're putting more resources into it, more effort into it. It really is going to make a difference, and we really do need something to that degree.
Judge, how long have you been on the bench now?
This is my 19th year.
Oh, that's great.
Wow, it's fantastic. Have you seen during the years a different attitude with the legal system as far as we discussed before, mentioned before, you can't incarcerate out of this epidemic?
Right. So just generally, there's been a lot of disrespect and danger directed towards police officers. And I always say when they come into the court that, I don't have to deal with that usually, because when I'm in court, I can put people in jail or I can deal with it another way. I think things are getting, the division in the country, things are getting a lot tougher, a lot harder to deal with.
Really?
And things get more grueling. But I always try to really kind of have that positive attitude, like I said, listen to everybody and just try to make a difference on each individual case, each individual person that comes in front of me. Getting back to sort of the addiction area, I had a woman in front of me at one time, and she was, I'm setting her bail, and she was arguing with me. I want to go home. I want to go home. I want to go home. I said, ma'am, I'm tired of reading about people dying. I'm trying to help you save your life. That's what I'm trying to do here today. She was adamant, like, that I was being mean to her or whatever. She comes back 3 weeks later for her preliminary hearing. Judge, I just want to thank you. You saved my life.
Right.
How much reward?
And that makes
rewarding.
Right. And that makes it all worth it.
Yeah.
So, like that was kind of a difficult encounter while I was trying to, get her to, sort of go, unfortunately, out to the prison, but so that we can get her the drug and alcohol evaluation and get her back, moving forward.
I mean, you just mentioned the prison. That's George Hill in Delaware County, and it is now going to be taken out of privatization.
It's out.
It's out, and that is a really good thing.
Have you
ever been there?
Yeah, I've been there.
Inside?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To visit, to speak.
Listen. Everybody,
to speak to the
Linda,
inmates.
Everybody says they visited, okay?
I visit.
So the private practice that I started in, the gentleman I worked for was the solicitor for the guards and the wardens in the prison, and we were there when it was privatized.
Mm-hmm.
So we were representing the county, but then we saw the front end of when it was privatized. And there was an issue from the get-go.
Yes.
We discussed it legally that you really needed to keep the records department, and they didn't. And that's why when the private company started, I won't name the private company, but when they started, there was people maybe being kept in too long when they shouldn't have been, or people being released that shouldn't have been released until they got it under control. But then as the years went by, Rendell, when he was governor, put a moratorium on private prisons. So he basically said, all right, there's no more. So that was Delaware County was the only one in the state of Pennsylvania that was privately run.
Yeah.
And now it's back to the county. And I agree. I'm looking forward to see that maybe it'll improve things.
Yeah. When it's not filling the cell for money. Mm-hmm. There was a case in upstate Pennsylvania, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, where judges were incarcerating young kids for ridiculousness.
Mm-hmm.
And they got long prison terms, the judges, which they should have. It was horrible. Yeah. I mean, in your position, Judge, you have to be as fair as possible within the law, I guess. That's
right.
Really what it is.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what I tell people, you give me the facts and then I apply the law to those facts. And like in a landlord-tenant case, I'm not throwing you out of your house. I'm setting the parameters for moving this thing forward. You have two sides here. You have a landlord and you have a tenant. And so we have to move this along. So, that's just a little aside.
Linda, I wish that I knew Judge Maddox 45 years ago. Okay?
Right?
It's like I tell Judge Duffy, I said, Judge, if we were friends back then, she says, we wouldn't have been friends back then.
That's perfect.
Yeah, it's really funny stuff. Okay, so you were called to become a judge, and that was exciting, right?
Yeah.
Was it a little scary? Or
maybe apprehension, but not scary. Yeah, I was apprehensive at first, but it's been great ever since. I had a good mentor. I'm going to mention him, Judge Perfetti. You may have.
Yeah.
Well, he was. Mm-hmm. He was a judge for 36 years, right. So maybe you were clean and sober even before him.
Yes, I was.
But he's coming back. He's going to be a senior judge with us.
Okay.
And that's great. We're all looking forward to it. But he was like a mentor. He really kind of would say, listen, you know, that's not the way we do it. Here's how we do it. And I listened to him, and I absorbed everything. And you know he's a great judge.
And you had schooling for this, didn't you?
Every year we have a week of continuing legal education, and then initially we have what they call new judge school, which is also a week. But yeah, I mean, just as I said, I think if you're a person of common sense, you're going to be a good judge, and if you're not, then you're not going to be a good judge.
So when you have to listen to a case or decide. For somebody who's in an addiction and they had criminal activities because of their addiction, do you recommend treatment? I guess it's the level of – I'm not talking about dealers. I'm talking about people that are addicted and they're – you know, it's a pathetic life, and I know what it's like, and Linda knows what it's like. That plays into your decision to get them help, right?
Yes. I would like to think that most of us – understand that prison isn't the place for the addict.
Yeah.
It may be for the dealer or, you know, the hardened criminal, but, you know, your basic person that's struggling, it's a disease. I mean, I agree with that. Yeah. Some people don't. I do. I think it's absolutely a disease. I think recovering addicts are some of the strongest people that I've ever met. You just can't imagine how much effort it takes to just kind of stay clean, sober. Yeah. And so if I get an opportunity to get someone like that in front of me, I'm certainly going to try to direct them in the right way. And then if I get somebody at the beginning when they're in the throes of their addiction, then I'm also going to try to get them to the treatment rather than to the prison.
Do you have resources to send people to?
Yes, we have all kinds of resources. We have great organizations. I just did a virtual resource forum with child guidance resource centers in Havertown. We did a virtual seminar, so to speak, this past Wednesday. We had Harry's Helping Hands for, you know, we had Key Recovery. We had Horsham Clinic. I mean, and it was set up for, I was sort of the co-host, and it was great. And it was a way to let the general public know that, as you always say on your show, there's help out there.
Yeah.
There's tons of help out. You got it. You, as you say, there's no drive-through.
And no delivery.
Right. You got to come and get some help. So, yeah. And as judges, we have certainly through our education, they tell us when things that we can do and places that we can send people to help.
What about sentencing guidelines like that, the tiers for the DUIs? That, if you get somebody that has the third one, you're kind of boxed into that little box.
That doesn't come in at our level.
It doesn't.
Because we don't sentence.
Okay.
But, yeah, I understand what you're saying.
But would you divert a DUI? A guy who had a third or fourth DUI, would you divert them?
That wouldn't be my call. For me, it would just be the preliminary hearing. Is there, you know, is it more likely than not that they were – DUI.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, yeah, there's things we can do as a condition of bail to kind of help out or whatever. But no, that as far as like those major diversion programs, like, you know, ARD and everything like that alternate resolution.
Yeah.
Yeah. That all occurs at the next level, the Court of Common Pleas.
Okay.
Judge, when somebody comes in with a DUI and you can find that they're guilty, how does PennDOT find out about this? Is it automatically that the courts have to report to PennDOT? Because, you know, DUI is beyond – it's so serious. But the ramifications when you have to put that Intoxilock in your car and blow in it is a nightmare. Yeah. I have somebody very close to me who had it in for a year, and you could be driving down the street and it goes off. And you,
yep.
Yeah, again, all that's done at the common pleas level, but I assume that once you're sentenced, that's sent to PennDOT and they have a record of it. And that's how that gets done. And So
the feeling, I'm sure you're friendly with a lot of other district magistrates or district justices. Are they in the same mindset as you? I mean, because you're like the perfect judge.
No, I don't know about that.
No, well, yeah. I'm saying you have all the qualities of someone like Linda and I who are addicts that would want to come in front of you because you would be fair.
Right.
Is that the sense? Is it getting that way?
I think it is. Because and even with our education each year, there's more and more things on the opioid crisis or, you know, alternates to punishment or whatever the case may be. So, yes. And I think that it's such a big problem. It's a huge – the opioid crisis is nothing like, I hate to say it, what you guys went through. An addict is an addict is an addict, I guess. I mean, but, you know, that addictive personality. Yeah. But, yeah, just having that – the psychology background, I have that understanding of an addictive personality. I mean, you could be addicted – and it bothers me. Like, I like to watch sports, and you got all these gambling ads on this.
Oh, God.
I can't think of a worse possible – sorry to the gambling industry, but I can't think of a worse possible thing to put on – you know, while you're watching like the Phillies or, you know, whatever you're watching.
Yeah. It's on constantly during the news.
It's on all the time.
Right. But to an addicted personality, that is a problem. And so, you know, and if your addicted personality, this is just me being, you know, I'm no expert in it or anything like that, but just my understanding, I mean, it could be drugs, it could be alcohol, it could be, you know, food, it could be sex, it could be gambling. You know, it's just – so that's why to come back to what I said earlier, that's why I understand that when people are in front of me, they're struggling and they're fighting and they need a little bit of help. And the little that we can do as judges is great. So,
if you're just joining us now, Linda and I are speaking with Judge Christopher Maddox. He's a sitting judge outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And we're just talking about what it's like to be a judge, what are the difficult decisions a judge makes. It's pretty interesting stuff. And if you want to give a call, if you're not a chicken today, call us at 1-888-329-3306. That's 1-888-329-3306. Why are people so afraid to call?
I don't know. Maybe they think we'll put them on the spot or something, or they don't want to out themselves. I'm not sure.
I mean, some days we had a lot of people calling. Some days we don't. It's fine. Look.
Maybe they're outside today. It's so nice out.
Yeah. Look, whatever it is.
Let's talk about New Jersey and legalizing recreational use today. Judge, what do you think about it? Do you think it's a good idea to make it legal for everybody?
No, I'm not a big fan of recreational use for marijuana. I do realize the need for medical marijuana, but – I just think it's such a gateway to further drug use and other drugs that I'm not a fan of it at all. So,
Linda, what do you think?
I think it's a terrible idea, and I don't think – we've been talking about this before the show started. I've been asking Fetterman and other people why. Where's the law? You know, you have to tell me if I'm impaired at 0.008 for alcohol – what is the level of THC that makes me impaired? And how are you going to test? And how are the police going to determine it? Just by smell and looking at your red eyes, but maybe I smoked a month ago and I have allergies today. What's the level going to be? And people are now going to be drinking and having marijuana and still getting in their car and thinking it's okay. So I'd like to know what laws would come with it if we would do it in Pennsylvania. And I think we're going to see a lot of changes.
And it's very complicated. Across the country, this marijuana is very, very complicated.
But it's about making money.
That's exactly what it is.
Right, and they're also they're also lacing marijuana with stuff that. Just...
There you go. Yeah.
Yes. Everything is laced now.
Right.
Everything is laced now. So when we come back, let's talk to the judge. Let's talk with a judge on. I don't know, a variety of different subjects.
Sure.
I'm fascinated by a judge because I can never be one, Linda.
Me either.
You know? We'll be right back.
Bye.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
Hey, it's Bobby Hart from Voice and Heart, and you're listening to Clean and Sober on WWDB 860.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
If you're just joining us now, we're talking with a sitting judge, Christopher Maddox, and it's incredibly important and extremely interesting on his perspective of what it's like, you know, when one of us in our addiction comes in front of him, and the way that decisions are made and the compassion inside the law, how those decisions are made. So, right. Judge, it's great.
I think the last time I was here, I told the story that, you know, I'd like to tell it again that so when I first took the bench, I was, as a condition of bail, I was putting, you know, a person must attend AA meeting or NA meeting. And so a friend of mine who was big in the, you know, that the recovery community, helping people.
Yeah.
Said, well, why don't you come to a meeting, Judge? And I said, can I? And he's like, I'll clear it with everybody because it is anonymous, right? He's like, I'll clear it with everybody. So we had lunch one day. He said, okay, you're on. You want to come by, you know, St. Bernadette's Church tonight at, 7 o'clock? I'm there. And so I was there. And then, you know, one of the first things somebody said, they stood up and said, hey, you know, I'm Jason. I'm a recovering addict, you know, 3 days, yeah. You know. I'm glad I had a good week. This was the first week I didn't think about killing myself, and I just sunk. But I was glad that I went, and so a few weeks later, I had somebody in front of me, and you know, I'm setting bail, and I'm like, okay, you're going to go to NA, and you're going to I want to see the signatures, and you know, bring the proof in, and. You know, I said, because I know about that. He goes, I know, Judge, I know. We love you. We heard that you went to a meeting. I said, I felt really good about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was sort of my approach. Like, I'm a new judge, but like, I wanted to learn, like, what am I sending these people to, or what are they going through, or, you know, and it really helps. So, and it helped me. So,
yeah, that's a good perspective to see what it's like and all meetings are different. Mm-hmm. Right, Linda?
Yes. I mean,
different personalities in all the meetings. And, you know, even for our recovering community, not all the meetings are for everybody, right?
Yeah.
You almost feel bad when you say, I didn't like that meeting. But you have to pick and choose.
Right.
But as long as you're involved, you know, that's the important part. Let me see what else. If you need help, call that 1-800-662-HELPLINE. It's very important. You know, and that's, you know, they're trained people that are going to answer that phone. And if you're listening, if you're a person in an addiction or you're a family member, get that number. Put it on your refrigerator door, because once the blank hits the fan, it's hard to find out where to get help.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, and I find that, you know, being around this for so long as you are, Linda, even the doctors don't know where to get help to send you to get help. So that number, 1-800-662, is extremely, extremely important. So we just have a new part of the show today that I want to bring up, and it's called Recovery Question of the Week. And, Judge, I want you to chime in to this. So here's the question from Larry K. from Las Vegas, Nevada. I received a federal felony conviction in 2001 for mail fraud. How can I get rid of this albatross around my neck? Okay. Can I just chime in first, Judge? So I'm a little familiar with federal felony convictions, and I know how to get rid of them. I know how you can attempt to get rid of them. For a federal charge, you have to go through the Department of Justice in Washington. Online, there's an application. It's 80-some pages that needs to be filled out completely, and you better not lie on it because they'll find out. That application is submitted to the Department of Justice, and then there's a process. There's an investigation, and first of all, you need to be either off of parole or probation for at least 5 years. And then then there'll be an investigation, and then it will be submitted or recommended to the sitting president of the United States, because that's the only way now to get rid of a federal felony conviction. And hopefully you'll be the lucky one who gets chosen. I know this process very well. I was convicted in 1984 of a federal narcotics charge, and I went through the process legitimately, and I was granted a pardon. So what I say is, in recovery, there are great rewards, but I'm not so sure that everybody can get a pardon from the president in recovery, but it's good to at least start the process. If it's a state charge, Judge, should I talk a little bit about, in Pennsylvania at least, I'm sure every state has this, we have in Pennsylvania a program called Road to Recovery, I think it is, and mm-hmm. it's a program. You have to be 3 years off of probation or parole, and then go online in any state that you're in, find out where, you know, just plug in pardons or paroles in your state, wherever it is, and there'll be a form. Fill it out and start the process. If you don't start the process, you can't be pardoned. You know, so it's easy as that. But it is possible.
Right.
Judge, you ever get anybody in front of you who's like, help, what do I do? Or,
well, again, I most of the stuff is done at the level past me. But yeah. I do know through my friends that are defense attorneys and whatnot that typically in Pennsylvania, you're not going to get it expunged. That's the, you know, you can get misdemeanors expunged, but you're probably not going to get a felony expunged. But you're right. About the only way to do it is through a pardon through in Pennsylvania would be the governor.
Right.
But I do understand what you're saying, that there are these programs now that they're sort of making it, I think, easier for people to apply and maybe go through the process. But again, that's kind of done. I mean, I think a defense attorney would give you a better answer to that. But that's just my understanding from talking to some defense attorneys about what's going on and, you know, how things are handled.
In Pennsylvania, it's actually called Pathways to Pardons. And that has to go through the there's a committee. The lieutenant governor is in charge of that, which would be Fetterman right now. And they make a decision. In this state, the governor cannot make it on his own. There are other states that the governor has the discretion to make the decision. So, you know, it's a tough thing, you know. You make a mistake, you pay. Unfortunately, it is what it is.
A lot of my clients, they wanted to know, could they get it expunged? And it had only just happened.
Yeah.
I mean, once you tell them they have to wait 3 years or wait 5 years, they're very disappointed. And they feel like then they don't try and they don't forget. And they chronically relapse, the heroin addicts and the opioid addicts. It's very hard for them to get 3 years or get 5 years. We're just trying to keep them alive at that stage. And, you know, if they get to a stage like you, over 30 years sober, you're going to apply for the pardon. You know, it's a whole different thing as people who are in trying to learn active recovery right now, trying to get one day at a time.
And as addicts, we know we want it immediately.
Immediately. What do you mean I have to wait 5 years? I heard I could get all my hot charges expunged.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's not exactly how it happens. And,
or a lot of people think the legal system forgets. Oh, I'm clean now for a year. I'm a good boy.
Right.
It doesn't work like that. You know, it's
but it doesn't forget anything.
Right. At least, you know, if you're thinking about it, it's a good it's you're moving forward, you know, in some kind of intelligent mindset. You know, I just want to mention a couple of the people here. Stephen Sussman's watching from Florida. Betsy Kalish, Ellen Schwartz. We have a lot of people watching the show, Judge, because of you. Frank Griffin, another Delaware County guy. Daniel Fleming, Mark Willig.
Frank's watching.
You know,
is that my Frank Griffin?
I don't
know. Keep going.
Patty Weeks, Alan Traubman, Kathy Wolf Collin. Hey, God, thank you so much, everybody, for, you know, supporting us on a weekly basis. We really do appreciate all the, you know, the support we get. You know, it might be a nice thing when people are watching and they're plugging in whatever to say where they're from, what part of the country. What do you think, Linda? Is that a good idea?
It would be a great idea.
Thank you. I'm glad you
thought
of it. Great
idea. I'd like to see how many from Vegas are watching.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, we're on Sunday morning in Vegas at 7 o'clock. So I guess
awesome.
After you leave the casino and you're,
right?
You know, loop beyond. So, Judge, what do you see in the future? Anything different?
Well, I think for the recovery community, I mean, things are only probably going to get better because the courts are, you know, we're slow to come around, but we're coming around. I really believe that. So, so I think things are going to get better. There's going to be more treatment options. There's going to be less, you know, punishment. And hopefully just to get the person to really beat the addiction and move forward. So I think the courts are finally getting it. So.
Yeah, that's so great, you know. Linda, I want to thank you for sitting in for Mark.
No problem.
You know, you always do a great job.
We always know we
can count on you. And Judge Maddox, thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
You're our on staff district justice when we ever need.
Well, Judge Duffy too. I know.
Judge Duffy's a little further away, but we love her also.
I got you.
You know, we love her also. Hey, remember, if you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, help is available. Please call 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-4357 for Clean and Sober Radio. I'm Gary Hendler.
Linda Elkins.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about this broadcast, please join us on our mission at cleanandsoberbroadcasting.com.
Everybody is a star.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.